Hello, everyone. This is Kevin Annett, and it's a great honor and privilege to be speaking with Dr. Catherine Horton today. It's February the 14th, Valentine's Day, 2019. Catherine, welcome.
Hello. Very, very honored to be on your show, Kevin.
Now, we have a lot to talk about. We're going to do a series of these programs relying on, you know, our own, both of our expertise and experience. Let's talk, first of all, about the whole issue of targeted individuals, who might be responsible, the technology involved in, you know, stalking and disrupting the lives of people who are trying to bring out the truth and confront these institutionalized wrongs. Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience with any of that?
Oh, yes, gladly. So for those people who don't know me, I'm originally a particle physicist. I was a researcher, first an undergraduate, then a PhD student, and eventually a research fellow at the University of Oxford in England. And I started off as a particle physicist. And then when I changed fields to study the what I call the physics of complex human systems. So this is everything, economies, currency systems, you know, legal systems, anything where a lot of humans work together and build a system. So I changed to that and I attended a court case, a very famous court case in London, to study the English legal system. And that's the moment when I started being overtly stalked by MI5. So they placed people to wait for me in front of my drive every single morning. They tracked me, basically stalked me all the way to the train station, then into London, and then back home from the court every evening. And this went on starting at the beginning of, I think it was the beginning of November 2011, when I first noticed. And it hasn't stopped to this day. So then I left Oxford and I thought, oh, this is probably just a British thing. You know, British intel is kind of known to be a bit kooky. So I thought, okay, this is going to stop when I leave the UK, but it didn't. So German intel started stalking me just as British intel had, and they destroyed two of my company ventures. They broke into my home repeatedly. And then at some point, so this is after years and years and years, I also had VIP stalking and a lot of crazy things. And I never really understood what it was. It took me absolutely years to figure it out. And then it was already in 2000, I think it took me a year before I told my husband that I was being stalked because it was just so intimidating. And I thought, you know, he will not believe me or will just, ridicule me if I say it. So after a year, I told him. After 2 years, I told my parents. And then eventually we changed our country. We moved to Switzerland and we had another housebreaking, a very demonstrative one. And that's the moment when I said, okay, I had enough. Yeah. I was keeping quiet about it for a very long time. Tomorrow I'm going to go to the police and report all this. And then within half an hour, I was assaulted with a directed energy weapon in my own home. And they actually burned me in my own home demonstratively as soon as my husband and I went to bed. They literally just burned me in my own bed. So I didn't really know what these weapons were at the time, but I could tell that there's some sort of beam. And what happened is that from that day onward, which I think was the 10th of January 2016, so over 3 years ago, I have been assaulted with directed energy weapons every single day.
Now, first of all, the question a lot of people have is, why is this happening? What is it that you think you did or said or brought attention to yourself that would cause these attacks?
Now, I thought for a very long time, I thought, oh, maybe it was because I went to this court case, and it was actually Berezovsky versus Abramovich. It was a famous court case where two Russian oligarchs were fighting each other in the London High Court. Now, I went to that court case because it was in the papers every day. It was, I think, the longest running case, if maybe just one of the longest running cases, and had very high profile barristers and, you know, all the fireworks. So I wanted to see how the English court system works. And for a long time, I thought, oh, maybe MI5 actually started stalking me because they didn't know who I was. But then when I started my investigation, I realized that, no, I had been their target for a decade or more before that. I just didn't know. And I had actually been entered into human research, into illegal, highly brutal weapons research and human experimentation. And I had never known. And this was just a good occasion to take a program which has a covert part and an overt part, to take it overt, because then I would go around exactly as I did for a long time, claiming that MI5 started stalking me then. It was the perfect cover-up operation. Okay.
So because of your work, I mean, as a physicist, this is why you're originally targeted. What in particular? No,
I think it's much. So I figured out by going back. So your viewers probably don't know, but so the directed energy weapon assault started in 2016. And a year later, doing an investigation with a former colleague, I found out that I've been non-consensually implanted with microchips. And then I did a lot of research and I traced it back and I discovered that I had actually been implanted in my first year as an undergraduate at Oxford. I was 18 at the time. I wasn't involved in anything that could have been a threat to anybody. I could barely do my homework, you know, for university, let alone be a threat. So,
in other words, an implant with, and this has all been scientifically proven now, the existence of these implants. First of all, the directed energy weaponry is not effective without being implanted first. Is that correct?
I think it's it can be, but I think what they are actually working on now is interfacing the two and connecting that up to artificial intelligence. I think that's the real story, you know. So what I find is that the typical victim, and it just kind of goes back to the beginning of your question of why they're doing this, mm-hmm. a lot of people think, because they have been set up to think that and led to believe, that they have done something wrong. It's either they're campaigning or something. But if you really carefully do the analysis, in the vast majority of cases, you realize that they have been entered into this program a lot longer before. Sometimes it's even generational. And there's a turn-on curve, and that's when they notice it, you know?
Very interesting, because in other words, it's not because of anything we've done, but because they suspect, or maybe it's a more broad spectrum chipping of the population. Is that, do you think, what's happening?
That is exactly correct. So by now I have scanned a lot of people, and I was shocked to find, you know, how many people are chipped. Pretty much every victim who I've scanned, or I got to scan, I found some chips in them. So I think as soon as they are victim of anything, you know, with anything, I mean, gang stalking or housebreaking or harassment with intelligence agency methods, I think the intelligence agencies actually start off with chipping people first, because then they can track them. And only then will they do overt harassment. So I think you're absolutely right. It affects a very large number of the population.
So first of all, about this chipping, I know obviously they become more sophisticated, but how are people implanted without their knowledge?
It is, so the way it's done, as I understand it, so from the evidence of the victims and also from an MI6 whistleblower called Karl Clark, so he went public in 2009 in the German press, and there's an interview you know, with him on my website in English and the original German. And in that interview, he explains how the intelligence agencies are breaking into private homes and also hotel rooms. So the way they do it is that they pump an anesthetic gas, for example, through the letterbox or under the door, come in and then do whatever they need to do. Okay, so what I have, so this is the MI6 British intelligence whistleblower. And what totally matches that testimony is the evidence from the victims, who say that they have woken up with surgery scars, sometimes microsurgery, sometimes laser surgery, sometimes real kick-ass big, you know, whooping surgery scars. Sometimes they have what's called missing time. So they would just, you know, either just phase out maybe in the early evening and then have no recollection, you know, or sometimes they wake up hours and hours later than normal, sometimes along with their pets. Okay, so there was one victim who had three dogs, and she woke up hours and hours later panicking, thinking, okay, by the time I go downstairs, there will be a massive puddle from these three dogs. And the dogs only then barely woke up, it was something like 11 o'clock. So it's clear that they were anesthetized.
Now, when they insert these things, how are they inserted? And let's talk a little bit about the nanotechnology involved and what they do in the body.
Okay, so as I understand it, again, based on the evidence I've seen, I think the quickest and most common form of implanting, there's several ways. I think by now the chips are so small they can put them in with syringes. Okay, there's also fancier stuff that can be put into vaccines, but this t type of kind of old tech, bigger devices that I'm talking about. They are put in either with syringes or with laser surgery. So this would be a small laser scalpel that you can use to cut the skin, for example, cut it open. As I understand from doctors, it doesn't even bleed because the blood coagulates because of the laser. Then you put in a little chip implant, and then you kind of seal the whole thing. You put tissue glue on that holds the tissue in place, and you just press it close for, I think, less than 30 seconds. It holds it on in place, and then people wake up with something that looks maybe like the scratch from a cat or a paper
Or
cut.
spider bite or whatever.
Exactly.
And what do they do when they're in the body? Exactly what do these chips do?
Well, there's an entire collection of functionality. I should dig out the book. It's not on this bookshelf behind me, but I can even show what these chips look like. So they can do several things. As I understand it, these chips are charged through Wi-Fi, and the technology to charge electronic equipment through Wi-Fi already is patented and is known to exist. So these things are very advanced technology. They charge themselves up like that, and they are emitting radio frequencies. So the typical RF radio frequency chip would be communicating with a bigger emitter. Are typically on the neck or the back of the head. So you have a big emitter on the back of the head that can do all the radio communication, and then that emitter would be interfacing with the mobile phone network or the Wi-Fi network, but also internally on the body would be coordinating all the other body chips. Now, in
So
detail, these body chips cannot just communicate. Sorry, I've
I'm sorry,
been.
Catherine, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just a question. This is to receive messages. Like, what do they do by having them at the base of the head like that?
So this is from the fact that these strong emitters are at the back of the head and the neck of the head, that's from experience combined with the testimony of a microwave weapon expert in Belgium, who said that traditionally agents, so intel agents and pilots, were typically implanted above the hairline in the neck or on the back of the head. And if I had to, make an educated guess, I think they use the back of the head, first of all, because the top can be kind of pulsed, from various points, including satellites and cell towers. But also the back of the head, has the skull is thicker. So in other words, you can kind of protect the brain from the heat generated from these chip implants and also the radiation a little bit. Not much, but every little helps.
And what's the purpose? Why are they shipping people back there? For what
I
purpose?
think it's so you need to put somewhere on the head, and also it's kind of inaccessible, the back of your head and your neck. You don't really see it. So what they put there is typically the strong emitters, the ones that would be communicating with the Wi-Fi router, for example. Now, what this thing does is it gets all the remote control signals that can be used to sorry, I realized I didn't switch the screen. So the emitters on the back of the head seem to get the signals that somebody who's remote controlling these chips. So they are biosensors, they can be read out, but they're also active. They've got active functionality whereby they can do a whole lot of things.
Like what?
Typically, what these chips are doing is, number one, they can generate heat. So in other words, they can kind of cause local inflammation at the low level. When the heat is turned up, they can cause agonizing pain and really burn the tissue from the inside. And with some victims, they will see that they're literally their flesh is burned from the inside, or they would end up with skin burns and they don't know where it's coming from. Now, when it's on the outside, say on your face or your chest or your back, that type of burning in the typical case would be a directed energy weapon burning you. Right. But if it's, for example, the inside of your thighs, as some victims reported, then that burning is most likely a chip implant network, maybe combined with a nanotech network, you know. And these things can just create an absolutely astounding amount of heat, you know.
Now, can they actually affect thoughts, behavior, mood, memory, things like that?
Yes, absolutely. So for those people who have never met this topic, there's an entire plethora of chips. So the classical, probably the oldest type of chip is the radio frequency chip, you know, that can just send and receive a signal. So you can imagine that in the olden days, maybe they would chip soldiers and pilots, and then they could read out by remote control, you know, their ID number and stuff like that. But then a step up is, you know, funkier chips. There's a type of chip that seems to connect up with the nervous system, maybe with nanotechnology tentacles. What that chip can do is cause remote controlled pain. And it seems to me, because I'm suffering from that as well, I'm chipped like this. So I had, I was assaulted both with heat generating implants, but on the typical day, I am being tortured with pain, with remote controlled pain. And these chips can cause, even though it's just a tiny, tiny chip, because it's hooked up to your nervous system, it can create a pain sensation that is just out of this world. And I suspect that is because the once you take the charge, so it's kind of like a little electronic device, and the charge it holds and the electric signal it can generate is much stronger than what the nervous system and the brain can generate. So in other words, really ramp up the amplitude and cause absolutely agonizing pain.
How do you deal with it when that happens to you?
When they really turn it up, you're utterly helpless. So what the intelligence agencies have now done is they have created a new type of concentration camp, which is your own body. And so the typical victim would suffer pain torture. They would also suffer sometimes heat, so burning of the tissue. And then also they put these chips into the genital area. So these victims would, which is actually, frankly, most of them, but many are very reluctant to talk about this, they would be raped by remote control. And this is basically, they can induce erections or orgasms completely by remote control for the sole purpose of humiliating a victim and trying to break them down, you know, in the kind of the way you can break down any sort of victim, you know, who you're assaulting.
People talk about aluminum foil on that to block the transmission. Does that work using metal?
Yes, it kind of does. It really does. So the way it works is that electromagnetic waves are reflected by metal foil. So aluminium foil works, copper foil works, but copper is typically much more expensive. So aluminium is still the best shielding I know so far. There's some more modern, like Mu metals. I haven't tried those, but they have other magnetic properties and so on that can help. But in principle, the whole concept is that once you know where the strong emitter is that might be communicating with the base station, whatever that is, a cell tower, your own Wi-Fi router, you can kind of block the signals or dampen them by, for example, wrapping your head in aluminium foil. And that really, it does help. So in my case, the pain is reduced, but it takes sometimes up to half an hour to an hour. And I think that's the charge these chips are already holding.
I had a question for you as well. In a lot of the work I've been doing for many years, in the last 10 to 15 years, this phenomena happens more and more. People will show interest in the whole issue of child trafficking, the genocide I've documented, all of this work. And then all of a sudden, like a light turned off, they'll not only lose interest, but become very hostile in a very irrational way, not because of anything I've said or done, but because of obvious things that have been implanted in their mind. Now, because it happens so commonly now, how would you diagnose that if you heard about that? What do you think is going on there?
I think that falls into the category of neurotechnology. So Neurotechnology is, as I see it, basically a combination. It's the most advanced form. So we have the directed energy weapons. They are very ancient. They are like 1950s, 1960s type of weaponry that was actually researched openly until 1970s. Now, the chips are also much older than people realize. I've heard from this microwave weapon expert that people were already chipped in the 1960s and 70s. Okay, so the chips were fairly bigger, like the size of a rice corn, but, still, now they are miniaturized. Okay, so that's ancient technology. Now, the newest thing, and this is what, I think this is what has been researched in the 1980s, so 1970s, 1980s, and has then been deployed worldwide in the 1990s, is neurotechnology. And to me, it seems that neurotechnology is the combination and basically the further development of the previous two. So neurotechnology typically, as far as I can tell, involves chipping the scalp with a bunch of sensors, and the setup is very similar to, do you know these EEG caps where you have all these many, many sensors around the cap? Yep. Now, the typical victim would have exactly that type of number and exactly that distribution all around the scalp. So with that, they can monitor the brain waves. And I should say I have them for sure because I managed to record them with the bug detector. I managed to find the strong emitting chip implants, but there are also so many that it's sometimes hard to tell apart. But sometimes you can tell that these things are on because when these chip implants emit, so they are communicating all the time, they inflame the tissue. So, you know, typically what I noticed first is that I would have these sore spots on my scalp and I didn't know where the hell they came from. And with time, I realized, oh, it's always in the same spot, you know. And so there's some points where they've chipped me where when this stuff is working, it would actually inflame the tissue and let me know where it is. Now, when you have this distributed network and it falls under the category of biosensors, if you like, you know. So these biosensors can, first of all, sense, just like an EEG, your brain waves. But I also have the strong feeling that they can, when they turn on the current and turn on the signals, they can generate a field or pulsing field that will then mimic the natural brain waves and kind of pulsing fields of the brain. For example, it is known that the brain will undergo a certain kind of the electrical activity will change and there will be a pulsing field of a certain frequency when the brain goes into the sleep state.
Now, why are they doing that in order to, I mean, going back to my original question, why people's attitudes, emotions are suddenly changed like that?
I'll explain. Totally. I mean, just basically the reason why I'm so long-winded is I'm trying to onboard everybody who's never heard about it and I'm trying to build up to exactly this. So imagine the way to really understand how you can influence a person with this, a very crude method that they do with me by now daily, is they use the fact that I've got these biosensors. And imagine when you figured out what is the kind of electrical field pulsing of the human brain when you're going to the sleep state, you can turn on these chips, generate by external force that type of pulsating field and send somebody to sleep. Okay? But like that. Within moments, and you would be wide awake, driving down the street, wide awake, and the next moment you're falling asleep at the wheel. And they do use that for assassination attempts. Okay.
But while they're in that, when they're in that state of sleep, is that when their ideas can be changed? Is this how the mind alteration occurs?
Absolutely. So there's certain points in the sleep cycle where we're, you know, the brain is in such a state that it's learning. So if you can kind of, you know, poke it with ideas that you plant, then you can really change somebody. So they will learn stuff and wake up with new information learned, right, that previously wasn't in their database. They didn't have that sort of thought. Now, I suspect that this has done the following. There's another category of chip that's very common, not just these RFID chips. They are ear implants, and they can actually send messages. It's like having a little microphone implanted in your ear, but it's so small. You know, it's very hard to spot these on medical scans. Now, there are different technologies how they can do that, but they can send voices, okay? And it sounds like as if you had headphones in. So you get perfect high quality speech, but it's in your head kind of, and only you can hear it. Now, I'm convinced that every single person who is hearing voices has this technology in. Now, the way I have seen it and have heard victims report that it's done is the following. Once you have these ear implants, you go to sleep or you're forced to be in a sleep state where you can't really wake up, right? You're kind of forced to sleep, but you're also in a very kind of inducible state. Now, in that state, they will start talking to you through your ear implants, first of all, at an audible volume, and you would start having dreams in a coordinated fashion. They would kind of tell you what you see, almost like you do hypnosis, okay? So you're asked to imagine stuff, your brain responds, and then, you know, you're guided through these scenarios. Now, you can really, when you think about it, you have a person going to sleep for 6 to 8 hours, so you've got pretty much 6 to 8 hours to train them every single night. Now, what you can do is the following. You can train them at night with audible speech and then train the brain to keep picking up on these cues and responding them as you're turning the volume down. I have no idea how long it takes to build up this training, but I can tell you it's being done. And then what happens is that you would maybe get a cue, or they condition you to pick up on other cues. And then suddenly you're just, you know, you've woken up, you're in the middle of the day, you get that cue that was conditioned in, and you would have a certain thought. It could also be a complex opinion that you were kind of trained to have. Okay. Now, this is another thing that people need to know, very important. So my marriage has been broken up through this targeting, but when my husband and I were together and we started being targeted very intensely, the first thing I noticed is that he would wake me up in the middle of the night, absolutely groaning in pain. This was totally unusual. And when I tried to wake him up, I couldn't wake him up. And when I placed my hand above his head, just to kind of see what's going on, I reached into a very high intensity directed energy beam. So they were hitting his head, they were causing him pain, and I think they were doing aversive conditioning. And I think this is how it can really make people turn on others, you know?
It's interesting because so many of us have had that experience in a relationship where suddenly the person turns, becomes unfaithful, has all sorts of strange ideas about you out of nowhere. And it can happen within 24 hours or less. I mean, that's what's astounding about this, you know?
Absolutely. And I think because that's exactly what I experienced. I found that my husband changed personality. You know, we had a good relationship before. In the end, it broke up. Of course, targeting puts a weight on it. But also, I noticed at some point that he had memories of me liking or disliking something that were just not true. Right. You know, so they conditioned a certain image of me into his mind. And he would say things like, oh, you always do this and that. And I would think, hang on, I maybe done it right. Once, you know, not all the time. Now, I think what's very important is to realize that you can have this pain training. And I think when you've really trained somebody, the only thing you need to do is give them a cue, and suddenly they're in that role. Okay, so it's not really over 24 hours that they change a person. It maybe took weeks and months, but it's a kind of silent training, and then they activated the trigger, and this person suddenly, kind of their conscious brain picked up this thought.
Like electronic hypnosis, really.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm... They can do it to the eyes as well, you were telling me, the implant to create hallucinations and things.
Absolutely. So that is a very important type of implant to know about. So as I understand it right now, I'm sure there's much more sophisticated technology, but the oldest and simplest technology is putting a type of very advanced contact lens on the eyes.
Yeah.
And it seems to be, from what I understand, a type of thin film technology. It's almost like having a transparent little computer screen, like an LCD screen on your eye that is completely invisible under visible light. But if you use an ultraviolet torch that you shine on your eye, you can show that there's an extra layer, because it would suddenly reflect in weird colors, like bright green or bright turquoise, or, you know, stuff like that. So you can actually make these things visible. Now, what they do with those implants is that they give people nightmares, very vivid nightmares, or they give them dreams that are kind of like, you know, almost like a premonition. You know, there are some scene would be played out, and the next day it actually happens. And this is how the CIA can lead people to think that, oh, they're talking to spirits or their ancestors or it's some kind of religious experience, because you feel that your dreams mean something. But in actual fact, it is recorded footage that is played to eye implants. And with your eyes closed and your brain in a hypnotic state, you will watch this movie and then you will think it's a dream, but it's not. And the way to tell them apart, as I understand so far in the investigation, is that victims would report that these dreams are very vivid, very crystal clear. Sometimes they move in the dream. And I think what's there happening is that their brain waves are hooked up to a virtual kind of virtual reality simulation. And they're moving really the movie script responds to how they think they are moving through the through this, you know?
You know, people hearing this can get discouraged. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how we detect and how we prevent or overcome these things. I know you described earlier how you actually detect it. Can you tell me a little bit about the devices and methods you use?
Absolutely. So I should also say, maybe I can dig it out in a moment. There's an entire book where these implants are photographed. And I really want to push that book. And I want everybody to just get it, you know, and just see for themselves that these implants have already been operated out. We can, you know, I analyze them scientifically, but in terms of detection and what every single person can do, if you think that you are a victim of this, okay, I think the very simplest thing to do is to check for these eye implants. And especially if you have, for example, a lot of victims report that their children would suddenly come and say things like, oh, they've got really bad dreams, you know, or always the same dream reoccurring. Now, that is a clear sign that there's some type of programming going on. And with the children, I think the first thing to check is these eye implants. Now, you can check these eye implants. I'll just bring my measuring equipment in a moment. You can buy an ultraviolet torch and you can just shine it on your eye. And if your pupil is reflecting bright green, that's already a first indication. Sometimes when you look under ultraviolet light or, you know, more intense, some visible light even, you also have to check kind of above your you know, the region under your eyelid, above the iris, sometimes next to the iris, there's sometimes a milky patch that seems to be the readout unit, kind of like the little processor unit that steers this contact lens. So this is the quickest thing, but I guess if I may share my screen, I would like to bring up
have a website that has a lot of this on already. Tell us your website.
And let me just show you. So I've just brought it up in the background. So let me just share my screen. And okay, let me know if you can see this. Oops, sorry, that is the that is us talking about this one here.
Just to notice, this will be played on my radio show, so folks will not be able to see this when they're hearing. So tell us the name of your website and what we're looking at.
Okay, so you're looking now at a website called stop007.org. So 007, like James Bond, and it's spelled stop007.org. So stop007.org. Now, this is a website, and when people go on it, if they scroll down to the first, there will be big block images, and the sixth image is called Equipment and Detection. And it kind of shows a pencil, some cogs, and some technical drawings. Now, clicking on that link, people will see basically a list of all the equipment that I'm using. Okay? So this is, if you become a victim, this is the kind of stuff you should look into getting, maybe. Okay. Now, for detection, the most important section is really the measurement section. Now, on there, all the links that are shown here kind of point to the very same website further down. So if you click, for example, on the ultraviolet torch, UV torch, you can use these torches to detect eye implants and contamination of your flat. So sometimes victims would come back, and some victims scan their flat with a UV torch every single time they leave their flat, because they realized that when they leave their home, the intel agencies would come in and smear contaminants on their furniture. So this could be toxins, pathogens, poisons, anything, okay? No idea what they are, but these ultraviolet lights sometimes show that something was smeared on. Now, these UV torches are very, very cheap because people use them to detect if their pet has urinated on the carpet. Okay. So you can get it for something like $10, even in a pet shop. But the point is that when you shine it on your eye, so further down on this website, I'm showing the image of a victim, and I'm showing the eye of this victim under normal light and under ultraviolet light. And the image under UV light, you can see that the person who has naturally brown eyes, suddenly their eyes reflect, the pupil reflect bright green and the iris in purple. Okay, and I personally find it much easier to check for the eye, the pupil first, because UV light is naturally kind of purple, so it can be confusing, you know, but it's certainly not naturally green. Okay, so this is one thing that people can do. Then if you have very odd pains that are switching back and forth from one side of your body to the other, or you really think this is external and external harassment, it is really worth your time to get a bug detector. So let me just scroll to the bug detector. Hang on, where is it? I've just seen it here. So there's one bug detector that I use quite a lot. It's called the Tseco, and you can get it for about $150, $170, or sometimes $200, which is very pricey. So I would recommend that victims maybe band together and get one device, you know, kind of crowdfunding for it. But this device, even though it's not perfect, it gives you already a first indication. And on my website, you can see the device, you can see its properties, and also you can see a playlist with 8 videos where I show you how to use this device, and I show how I'm scanning myself and I'm finding my own body implants.
Amazing. And that's at stop007.org.
Exactly, yeah.
And what's been the success on this? I mean, tell us a little bit about your initiatives in court and working with victims and how people can resist these things.
So I should say that when they first started, when British intelligence and Swiss intelligence at the time started assaulting me with directed energy weapons, after I think five months of this, I went to the High Court and I requested an emergency injunction. Now, it was kind of on a whim that I did that, and I think it kind of took MI6 by surprise. I don't think they actually thought I would go through with it and just march into the High Court pretty much unprepared, but I did. And that was actually very successful. Even though the case was thrown out, it was very successful because I managed to get into the High Court and have two judges look at it and really say, yes, I think this is something that needs to be investigated, you know? So I went back and I had to ask for a time extension because I was assaulted so hard, and I also survived assassination attempts in that time. I literally couldn't get all the evidence together, and I didn't realize how vast this topic is, okay? Wow. Now, that was in 2016, so I started litigating in May, and it was thrown out at the end of July, kind of terminated. The case was terminated, put on ice under very weird, you know, conditions. Mm-hmm. But anyway, then I started an investigation, and the successes are the following. I think in 2016, I had a really hard time with my family, with friends, and with the general public talking about all this, even stalking. Now, at the beginning of 2017, I founded a kind of an investigative team of 5 women. We got together. And we put on weekly shows, YouTube broadcasts called the Techno Crime Fighters Forum, where every week for 2 hours, we'll just talk about this criminality nonstop. Now, after a year and a half of this, these broadcasts became ever more successful and popular. I think we really managed to educate people, certainly the victims. So they first of all saw that, okay, there's somebody who is a particle physicist from Oxford. There's also Karen Melton Stewart from the NSA. There was Melanie Richan, who had her human rights charity just working on this these problems. And there was Ramola Damaraj, who had been reporting about this for 3 years by that time. So people could see that this is not something that's just a joke or just in our heads or something that's going to go away tomorrow. This is real criminality.
Right.
So after a year and a half now, I can just give people the links. I've got the websites. And now I realized that when I talk to people in the street, suddenly they heard about microchipping, you know?
Yes. That's really interesting, Catherine. We had the same experience. What we found is as soon as you legitimize the topic, the system has to respond. So they pretend to address the issue, but they spin it and control it in the way they want, like with abuse survivors, whoever. Do you find that's beginning or what's,
Absolutely.
yeah?
Absolutely. And it's kind of like I call this system judoing. So I always
Yeah.
recommend to victims, they should think about this big, overwhelming system that's so big, and think about judo moves, because judo is using the size, exactly the fact that your opponent is much bigger than you, and you use their size and their inertia to bring them to fall.
Right.
And using the fact that you can move much, much quicker, being smaller, more nimble, and lighter. Now, when you do system judo, you use exactly that. You kind of use the methods that media are using, like YouTube, you put on broadcasts, and you just talk about it like the news will talk about it. And at some point, you just legitimize the whole thing. They can't say anything because there's so many people talking about it. And then, as you say, they have to respond. So what I found is that now they bring out these things and they say, oh yeah, but chipping is great because, hey, you can open doors with it. You can chip grandma who has Alzheimer's, and then if she wanders off, you can find her. And they totally gloss over the fact that actually these chips are planned and implemented to be used for torture, to really disincentivize you from doing anything against this crime cartel. They're used for monitoring you wherever the hell you are. They will know if you are going to a doctor, or if you're going to a lawyer, or if you're going to the police. And then the third stage is to rewrite the thoughts and opinions of your loved ones and you. That's not mentioned.
Yes. Now, you said before that when somebody is chipped, their whole family is as well.
Absolutely.
Is that now in working with survivors, talking about the intergenerational effects, all of this is obviously something much bigger than simply targeted individuals, right?
Oh, absolutely. I found that, well, actually, it's Catherine Austin Fitz, she's a very well-known financial advisor and financial analyst, and she said that in America, there are 350 million targeted individuals, and they split into those categories. Two categories: those who know that they are targeted individuals and those who don't. So in other words, the plan that is already implemented and is, I think, well, surprisingly successful, is to chip us all. That's the plan. And if you hear news about the Internet of Things, you always have to think that's exactly what's coming, but they're not telling you the full truth. The full truth is it's going to be the Internet of Things in your body. You're going to be hooked up to the internet. That's where the real money is, not hooking up your toaster. The point is to have your toaster control your body implants and your thoughts by remote control. That's the real
And
deal.
in anything in this culture, there's always big money behind it. And I want to talk on our next interview, the details of what are the cartels involved in pushing this? What are their connections with so-called intelligence services? What's the master plan? Now, you mentioned to me that we want to have, there's going to be a single corporation everybody works for, and everybody's a chipped component of that. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, or
Oh,
what's your
yeah,
opinion on that?
absolutely. That's a big topic in itself, but my research, in a nutshell, leads me to the conclusion that this big global corporation already exists. Maybe in the next episode, I can present evidence for this massive corporation. And when you trace it back, this corporation is ancient. It hasn't reached this global size just yesterday, and it goes back to an ancient corporation owned by the Vatican, and I believe it's called the Crown Corporation. So behind all this, behind the big international corporations that we know, is actually a much older corporation that owns them, and owns them through very, very shady financial shenanigans and very opaque financial ownership structures. But at the end of the day, I think you can prove by various methods that all the roads lead back to Rome. Okay, so.
And the Vatican Bank.
And the Vatican Bank, exactly. So I think this is what we are under, and this is how we are, all these victims of the church and the state, I prefer, and also all the victims of communism, by the way, if you analyze it, you realize it has been the same networks, the same mechanisms that led to, for example, the genocide in Canada and in the United States, but also the genocide in Russia and China. And I prefer to just talk about the victims of the Crown Corporation as opposed to victims of child abuse, satanic ritual abuse, or victims of communism. I think they're all the same.
It's interesting, in the 20th century, whether you called it fascism, Stalinism, whatever the system was a system of totalitarianism, of absolute state control. Now, that's what we've got now. It's like it's evolved towards that. The world has been Nazified, if you like. And this seems to be what we're talking about, would you say?
Absolutely. And you can also look at the covert signaling and the symbols used by everything, by fascist and communist and other dictatorships around the world. And you realize they're using the same symbolism, some of which you can find on the dollar bill. So the capitalist, covert signaling. And then you realize, hang on, we are dealing with the very same organized crime network worldwide.
Takes different names in each generation, but it's the same beast, it sounds like.
And if you're thinking in terms of corporation, I call it different branding. They have different branding. For example, in Germany, there's only one big corporation making washing powder called Henkel. And then they, kind of put the washing powder into little tabs or little purple, balls, whatever. But it's all Henkel. It's all the same corporation behind all these different brands. And I think that's what we have here as well.
Yeah. Now, Catherine, I wanted to have these interviews about 45 or 50 minutes long so I can play them on my show. So why don't we conclude this first one now? And we'll do some more after this. But is there any final message or sites or information you want to share?
I guess maybe a final word of encouragement, which is that over the last year already, I have seen not just a change, I have seen an explosion in awareness that is truly exponential. So now I would just say to all the victims, just go forth with total self-confidence and with your head held high, and know that suddenly there will be millions of people around you who understand exactly what you're talking about, and they support you.
And we lead by example, and you are leading. You are a very brave and honorable woman. I want to thank you for being with us. We'll carry this on again.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
I don't like words that hide the truth. I don't like words that conceal reality. I don't like euphemisms or euphemistic language. And American English is loaded with euphemisms because Americans have a lot of trouble dealing with reality. Americans have trouble facing the truth. So they invent a kind of a soft language to protect themselves from it. And it gets worse with every generation. For some reason, it just keeps getting worse. I'll give you an example of that. There's a condition in combat. Most people know about it. It's when a fighting person's nervous system has been stressed to its absolute peak and maximum, can't take any more input. The nervous system has either snapped or is about to snap. In the First World War, that condition was called shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language. Two syllables, shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. That was 70 years ago. Then a whole generation went by, and the Second World War came along, and the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now. Takes a little longer to say. Doesn't seem to hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. Then we had the war in Korea, 1950. Madison Avenue was riding high by that time, and the very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion. Hey, we're up to eight syllables now. And the humanity has been squeezed completely out of the phrase. It's totally sterile now. Operational exhaustion. Sounds like something that might happen to your car. Then, of course, came the war in Vietnam, which has only been over for about 16 or 17 years. And thanks to the lies and deceit surrounding that war, I guess it's no surprise that the very same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder. Still eight syllables, but we've added a hyphen. And the pain is completely buried under jargon. Post-traumatic stress disorder. I'll bet you if we'd have still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time. I'll bet you that. I'll bet you that. But But it didn't happen. And one of the reasons is because we were using that soft language, that language that takes the life out of life. And it is a function of time. It does keep getting worse. I'll give you another example. Sometime during my life, toilet paper became bathroom tissue. I wasn't notified of this. No one asked me if I agreed with it. It just happened. Toilet paper became bathroom tissue. Sneakers became running shoes. False teeth became dental appliances. Medicine became medication. Information became directory assistance. The dump became the landfill. Car crashes became automobile accidents. Partly cloudy became partly sunny. Motels became motor lodges. House trailers became mobile homes. Used cars became previously owned transportation. Room service became guest room dining. And constipation became occasional irregularity. When I was a little kid, if I got sick, they wanted me to go to the hospital and see the doctor. Now they want me to go to a health maintenance organization or a wellness center to consult a healthcare delivery professional. Poor people used to live in slums. Now the economically disadvantaged occupy substandard housing in the inner cities. And they're broke. They're broke. They don't have a negative cash flow position. They're fucking broke. Because a lot of them were fired. You know, fired. Management wanted to curtail redundancies in the human resources area. So many people are no longer viable members of the workforce. Smug, greedy, well-fed white people have invented a language to conceal their sins. It's as simple as that. The CIA doesn't kill anybody anymore. They neutralize people. Or they depopulate the area. The government doesn't lie. It engages in disinformation. The Pentagon actually measures nuclear radiation in something they call sunshine units. Israeli murderers are called commandos. Arab commandos are called terrorists. Contra killers are called freedom fighters. Well, if crime fighters fight crime and firefighters fight fire, what do freedom fighters fight? They never mention that part of it to us, do they? Never mention that part of it. And some of this stuff is just silly. We all know that. Like on the airlines, they say they want a pre-board. Well, what the hell is pre-board? What does that mean? To get on before you get on? They say they're going to pre-board those passengers in need of special assistance. Cripples! Simple, honest, direct language. There's no shame attached to the word cripple that I can find in any dictionary. No shame attached to it. In fact, it's a word used in Bible translations. Jesus healed the cripples. Doesn't take seven words to describe that condition. But we don't have any cripples in this country anymore. We have the physically challenged. Is that a grotesque enough evasion for you? How about differently abled? I've heard them called that. Differently abled. You can't even call these people handicapped anymore. They'll say, we're not handicapped. We're handicapable. These poor people have been bullshitted by the system into believing that if you change the name of the condition, somehow you'll change the condition. Well, hey, cousin, doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. We have no more deaf people in this country. Hearing impaired. No one's blind anymore, partially sighted or visually impaired. We have no more stupid people. Everybody has a learning disorder. Or he's minimally exceptional. How would you like to be told that about your child? He's minimally exceptional. Oh, thank God for that. Psychologists actually have started calling ugly people those with severe appearance deficits. It's getting so bad that any day now I expect to hear a rape victim referred to as an unwilling sperm recipient. And we have no more old people in this country. No more old people. We shipped them all away and we brought in these senior citizens. Isn't that a typically American 20th century phrase? bloodless, lifeless. No pulse in one of them. A senior citizen. But I've accepted that one. I've come to terms with it. I know it's here to stay. We'll never get rid of it. That's what they're going to be called, so I'll relax on that. But the one I do resist, the one I keep resisting, is when they look at an old guy and they'll say, look at him, Dan. He's 90 years young. Imagine the fear of aging that reveals. To not even be able to use the word old to describe someone, to have to use an antonym. And fear of aging is natural. It's universal, isn't it? We all have that. No one wants to get old. No one wants to die. But we do. So we bullshit ourselves. I started bullshitting myself when I got to my 40s. Soon as I was in my 40s, I'd look in the mirror and I'd say, well, I guess I'm getting older. Older sounds a little better than old, doesn't it? Sounds like it might even last a little longer. Bullshit, I'm getting old. And it's okay, because thanks to our fear of death in this country, I won't have to die. I'll pass away. Or I'll expire like a magazine subscription. If it happens in the hospital, they'll call it a terminal episode. The insurance company will refer to it as negative patient care outcome. And if it's the result of malpractice, they'll say it was a therapeutic misadventure. I'm telling you, some of this language makes me want to vomit. Well, maybe not vomit. Makes me want to engage in an involuntary personal protein spill. Thank you all. Give me a little life for Mo. Mo says hello.